then how are they not bound by the material modes of nature? If it is argued that the living entity is like the sky, which never mixes with any other object, and therefore is not bound, then one may ask how such a transcendental living entity can ever be bound by material nature. In other words, how would material existence be possible? In order to completely clarify the path of Krishna consciousness, Buddha would present this question to the supreme spiritual authority, Lord Krishna. In the kingdom of Maya, there are innumerable speculations about the Supreme Lord, who is variously described as non-existent, or as possessing material qualities, or as being devoid of all qualities, or as being neuter, a neuter object like a eunuch. But although mundane speculation is not possible, it is not possible to understand the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, Buddha wants to clear the path of spiritual liberation so that people can actually understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As long as one is affected by the modes of nature, perfect understanding is not possible. Lord Krishna will now describe to Uddhava further details of spiritual emancipation on the road back home, back to Krishna. Sri Uddhava Uvacha Guneshu Vatamanopi Deha Jeshvana Pabrita Gunena Bhajite Dehi Bhajite Vakatambhava. Sri Uddhava said, O my Lord, a living entity situated within the material body is surrounded by the modes of nature and the happiness and distress that are born of activities caused by these modes. How is it possible that he is not bound by this material encirclement? It may also be said that the living entity is ultimately transcendental and has nothing to do with the material world. Then how is he ever bound by material nature? So, Lord Sri Krishna in his own words is explaining that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the way to realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead and become fully God realized is through bhakti or devotional service to the Supreme Lord. That path of devotional service means that one, instead of engaging with the senses in material existence or trying to enjoy the material world, one tries to utilize, or one does utilize the senses, the mind, the intelligence, in the service of the Lord, and in that way one becomes liberated from material existence and actually goes back to the spiritual world. That's the simple message that Krishna is presenting in his own words in these instructions to Uddhava in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Later on in chapters a little further ahead, you'll see that Krishna makes it very clear that in order to take to the path of devotional service and in essence to turn one back on trying to enjoy the material world, the association of devotees is essential and extremely important. So in essence, Uddhava's questions are clearing the way to understand who is a devotee. Because if one needs to associate with devotees of the Lord, that essential element in order to actually make progress on the path to understand and to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead and to practice and understand devotional service, one must know what a devotee is. There are many misunderstandings as to the position of who is actually liberated and who is not. Sometimes people appear to be very spiritually advanced and yet they're not liberated. It's just an appearance. And sometimes people appear to be very ordinary persons and yet they're actually liberated persons. But they are neglected by people because of the external appearance. So here, Buddha's questions are very appropriate and very intelligent. He is clearing the path for a devotee. When they ask questions, they try to clear the path of advancement for themselves, but they also try to clear the path of spiritual progress for others when they inquire. It's interesting that people accuse devotees of being brainwashed, as if when you become a devotee, you become a mindless, you know, brainwashed sort of a zombie who has, you know, no power to think for themselves and is really just, in some sort of a trance. You know, the mind has been controlled by some charismatic leaders who have taken over their lives, and that's what people think of devotees. Not as much now in this, you know, in Melbourne, but it's still there. It's still there to a large degree, but not compared to what it used to be. In the early days, that mentality that if you were a devotee of Krishna, you were this, you know, brainwashed, mindless person whose intelligence had just been stolen by some, you know, rascal, charismatic leader in order to take all your money and take your life and make you subservient to their will. But surprisingly, although that mentality is not as strong, you still see that sort of influence when people see devotees working very hard and really trying to surrender to Krishna. Sometimes even members of the congregation sometimes think, you've lost your power of reason, you've lost your power to think, you've lost your intelligence because you're working so hard for Krishna like this, and you have no time to think, and you're like in this perpetual state of, you know, not thinking, sleep deprived, overworked, and therefore, you know, cannot think. That is actually a deception that sometimes people have. So we see here that actual devotees, they're very intelligent. Actually, only the devotees have intelligence by which they can act properly and, you know, perceive both material and spiritual aspects of existence correctly. And by that, their very keen intelligence, they can understand at all times what should be done and what should not be done. That's the actual fact. We see here that Uddhava, he's not just oh, Krishna, your God, you know, whatever you say, I will accept. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada used to test his devotees, that he would say something and just see whether they all said, oh, yes, Prabhupada.
And if they did, you'd say, well, you're nonsense.
Because that is not the the way in spiritual life. Just like there's that story that my spiritual master tells about the foolish disciple. The guru is riding along with on a horse, and his disciple is many disciples are coming behind him. Now, there's one particular disciple with him this day. As the guru was riding along, they went under a branch, and his hat got knocked off and fell on the ground. And so he kept riding. He turned around and he noticed his disciple didn't pick it up. And he questioned his disciple. He said, my hat's fallen on the ground. Why wouldn't you pick it up? He said, well, Guru, you didn't give me instruction to pick it up. So the spiritual master says, okay, I'll give you instruction. If anything falls off the horse, you know, I want you to pick it up. That's what we're trying to move the story. So,
whatever falls, you pick it up.
Whatever falls off, you pick it up. So they're going along, and the horse passes school, right? So the disciple picks it up. Spiritual master says, oh, I'll give you this. And I say, no, my hat falls off, my chali falls off, you know, my shoes fall off. Any different things fall off, you pick it up. So they're riding along, he's riding along, and the horse sort of throws the guru a bit, so he falls off the horse. The disciple keeps walking.
Not this.
And the guru says, why wouldn't you help me? So it wasn't on the list. So, we see here that Buddha is not that sort of disciple. So he is, questioning. So blind following is actually condemned. It's not acceptable in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, we see in the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna says to Arjuna that one should, in the fourth chapter, that's number 34, that one should approach the spiritual master and inquire from him submissively. One should render service unto him. So in this way you can actually attain knowledge of the absolute truth. So in that verse, one is encouraged by the Supreme Lord to not be a blind follower, but to, you know, ask, inquire. There needs to be submission, rendering of service and surrender to the spiritual master or Krishna's representative or Krishna. Otherwise, without without being tested by the spiritual master, then inquiries have no effect. In other words, if we make inquiries from the spiritual master or from Krishna, and we are not prepared to change our situation in life, so the spiritual master, we make some inquiry and the spiritual master will give some instruction. By rendering service and surrendering to that instruction, one makes advancement. If one inquires from the spiritual master with no inclination or intention of following what the spiritual master says, then that inquiry is absurd. Again, we see with Srila Prabhupada that quite often people would ask a particular question, and Srila Prabhupada would immediately detect that the person, you know, had no intention of following, or was incapable of following if Srila Prabhupada had given the answer and an instruction, and therefore, you know, he chastised the person for asking an absurd question. It's some, you know, just wasting Prabhupada's time and wasting the disciples' time and making a show and making a mockery of spiritual life. So without, you know, submission and surrender, yeah, inquiries have no effect, no value. At the same time, that submission and surrender does not mean that one becomes a blind follower. So, you know, both of those things. So one should inquire intelligently, and at the same time one should you know, have the intention to follow those instructions and surrender to the you know, guidance of the spiritual master. So that's here being shown by Uddhava. And also, as described here in the purport, it says that Uddhava wants to clear the path of spiritual liberation so that people can actually understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As long as one is affected by the motive nature, perfect understanding is not possible. So one must also approach the spiritual master, because the spiritual master is free from the motive material nature, and in this way they're capable of giving instruction. One should not inquire from persons who are not well situated in Vaishnava behaviour. So one should also approach a bona fide spiritual master, someone who understands the Bhagavad Gita as it is, and who follows the principles of Bhagavad Gita in their life. There are many personalities who can quote, you know, there's scholars in the Bhagavad Gita, there's scholars in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's scholars in Krishna Leela. You know, quite often we talk to people and they'll just tell you pastime after pastime and so many details of all the scriptures, and, you know, that they can make even devotees who have spent their life studying, you know, Krishna consciousness appear to know nothing. But the difference is that they, you know, they do not have any qualifications in Vaishnava behaviour, and therefore one should actually not listen to them. One might say, "Oh, well, it's Krishna Leela, you know, it's Krishna consciousness. What's the effect? You know, Srimad Bhagavatam, it's Bhagavad Gita. If I hear it, you know, how can that be bad?" To hear, you know, Bhagavad Gita, you're saying one should not hear Bhagavad Gita. So the scriptures and Sanatana Goswami cite the example that if you give a snake milk, then when it's touched by the lips of that snake, it becomes poisonous. One may say, "Oh, it's milk, it's good for you," but it's being touched by the lips of the serpent, and therefore it becomes poisonous. Again, one may say, "Well, I'm hearing from this person, all right, they're not well situated as a devotee. They do all sorts of nonsense. That, gee, they know so much, and I'll just take the good bits and just, you know, I'll just, you know, sift out the bad bits, the contaminated bits." That's like saying, "I'll drink poison and I'll just urinate out the bad bit." You know, it goes through your system. It goes through your system, it has an effect, and like that. So one should hear from those who actually represent Krishna, and those who are you know, prepared to follow Krishna's instructions in their life. So in that way, making inquiries from the right person in the right mood, it actually has an effect like that. So this is what we're learning here from Sri Guru. So his example is clearing the path. So that is, he's a sadhu, as we said. Krishna will show later on that association with sadhus is very important. Sadhu, one of the meanings of sadhu is one who cuts. So by cutting away the material contamination, the sadhu is cutting a path to tread spiritual activities, on the path of spiritual activities. Sometimes we have that, you hear that saying, when someone is going somewhere, they say, I'm going to cut a track. So the sadhus do that, they're cutting a track. Cutting a track means that they're cutting away the path so that you can walk in the right direction. Just like if one is in a forest, of huge trees and vines and what have you, very difficult. There's so many unnecessary plants on the path, they have to be cleared away, otherwise you can mistake the path, the right path, for the wrong path, or you can lose the path altogether, like this, very, very easy. So there are many weeds. Sometimes we think of weeds as being, little weeds in the garden, but weeds can be as big as, a redwood forest. And thick vines. Weeds, not just, when we talk of weeds, don't get the impression weeds are like these little, tiny little plants. I used to work as a landscape gardener in a plant nursery, and my boss once said to me, we're going to go and remove some weeds. And when I got to the weeds, there were these huge pine trees. I said, you call them weeds? He said, any plant, technically, where it's not supposed to be, is a weed. So, the sadhus, they actually cut a track through the weeds. Weeds, all the different things in our heart growing there that are in the wrong place, that shouldn't be there. And those weeds can be as big as, huge trees, forests thick. So the sadhus, they cut. That is not always appreciated, of course, that cutting action of the sadhus. Actually, in Bhagavad Gita 3:29, Krishna says that we should not disrupt the minds of the ignorant. They're very attached to material activities. Although they're very, very attached and their knowledge is very inferior, covered by the modes of material nature, we should not disrupt them. In the purport there, Srila Prabhupada describes it actually, although that's Krishna's instruction, the sadhus know Krishna's purpose, that he actually wants them to disrupt in order to help them go back to the spiritual world. But, of course, it has to be done very, very carefully. We should not disrupt the minds of people trying to help them to become Krishna conscious if it's anti-productive. If there is certainly some gain that they will make on the path of Krishna consciousness by that disruption, then that is okay. But if we disrupt their minds, and it makes them actually turn further from Krishna consciousness, we should be very, very careful. But we see in the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna says that one who preaches this Bhagavad Gita, one who teaches it to others, there's no one more dear to me. See, so in the beginning he's saying, well, don't disrupt the minds of the ignorant, very attached to material life. Don't just, but in the end he's saying, You know, that if you do, you push this Bhagavad Gita and teach it, you'll be very, very dear at this. So, both instructions are there. But the materialistic person, their knowledge is very inferior. They believe that they are the body. They believe that they're the material body. And they believe that those persons who are attached, byproducts of the body, they're their relatives. They believe that the land that they took birth in is the worshipful land. And they believe that the religious formalities or formulas or the rituals, that is the end in itself. Spiritual life, spiritual existence is a myth. You know, as far as going back to the spiritual world, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they actually take it as mythical, and there's sort of a sense of, you know, keeping peace in the world. You know, religion is like that. It keeps the peace in the world, and it helps them to have some sort of standards of morality and what have you. A lot of people just accept religion in that way. If there is a God, he has his existence, and we're doing fine here in the material world. So we do our religious rituals, we keep him happy, and we just keep enjoying the material world like that. So they have all these different materialistic conceptions which they're very, very attached to. And they don't want to hear. Again, you see the example of Uddhava. You know, Krishna is speaking to him and he's just, you know, hearing very, very nicely. So keenly is he hearing that, you know, he's able to ask these excellent questions. You know, he's hearing so nicely that, you know, just that essential point that perhaps may not have been, you know, could be further elaborated on, both for himself and for others who may make big misunderstandings, you know, who'll ask that question. So you see, actually, when a person hears very, very nicely, they have very good questions. It's not that if you hear nicely, you have no questions. Someone who hears really, really well, they have very nice questions. You see, Mahatma always has a question. He always comes every morning, hears very nicely. And a very intelligent question. You know, that is a symptom of one who hears very nicely. But, you know, a person is very material and gross, they don't want to hear anything. They don't have the inclination. And therefore, because they don't have the inclination to hear anything about spiritual life, they always say they don't have the time. You know, which is nonsense. You see, you know, the average materialistic person, fully engrossed materially, you know, if they stop at the traffic lights, you know, sometimes you see the traffic lights go green, and the person in front takes about a 2-second delay before they go, and in that 2 seconds, everyone's beeping their horn, you know, come on, you know, it's like, you know, it's, and they start yelling out the window, wind the window down. Oh, the press the button, you see. And come on, get up, everyone, you know, like this. There's 2 seconds. And but the same person, why are they in such a hurry? They're leaving work, and they want to go home, and they want to watch Neighbours. You know, there's an hour there, and then they watch, you know, Better Homes and Gardens, or this one and that one. But I'll spend 6 hours in front of the TV. I'll just, 6 hours will just go by like that, just completely wasted. You know? And I'll do that 7 days a week, 300. You know? So there's 2 seconds at the train. I don't have time to wait for you. And then I'll go home and I'll just spend hours and hours and hours just wasting time. Or I'll sit there and, you know, they have their little hobbies and their, you know, sports. They'll read the paper, they have the cricket, you know, and they'll read all the statistics of, you know, how many runs were done, you know, which teams are playing, and you know, what the odds are, you know, in gambling. So many things. They waste hours. They waste a whole day. But and if it comes to spiritual life, I don't have any time at all. I can't stop. So too much of it. So in order to speak something about spiritual life, you literally have to disrupt them. Anyone who's ever sold books on the street, or Christian books, what have you, the art of people coming past, and how to stop someone, how to stop someone, disrupt their life, completely disrupt their whole life, but do it in such a way that they really enjoy it. So they claim that Sankirtan devotees in Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement are these mindless people whose intelligence is being stolen, and yet they have this art that they can stop someone who doesn't want to stop. They can tell them something they don't want to hear, and they can sell them a book that they didn't want to buy. And these are the mindless, foolish zombie devotees, who are sleep deprived and have no idea what's going on. So, some of the different sankirtan, any devotee who sells, one magazine, one book, incredible. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, the core, he would be, even if his disciples came back and they sold, one magazine, he would be very happy. He'd praise and, glorify, knowing, how difficult that is, how expert that is. And, of course, it goes on by that supreme intelligence comes from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, and we see, Srila Prabhupada, his intelligence, how he, as he gives the example that, if you find an old piece of wire and a gourd, it's like a pumpkin, you hold it out in a stick, and you put it together, you make it like a veena, and you play music. So Srila Prabhupada gave that example. That's what he did. He went all around the world, and all the rejects of society, he picked them up, and he made them, do this beautiful kirtan all over the world, beautifully chanting the holy names of the Lord like that. So very, very intelligent, very expert. Someone who's able to utilize very, very little facility under extremely difficult circumstances and turn that into the most monumental manifestation that benefits all human society. That's intelligent. So we see, the Vaishnavas, they're very, very keen intelligence. So here, there's some examples that there's devotees also, although they take that risk and they take that time to disrupt people, they don't waste their time. If the devotee sees that they're actually trying to present spiritual life to someone to help them get out of material existence, but that person has no real inclination to take on board what the devotee is saying, or they may become very, very disturbed, and the devotees actually won't waste their time. As described in the Krishna book, the devotees are like waterfalls. As we know, sometimes a waterfall flows and sometimes it stops. So a devotee is like that. Sometimes they speak, sometimes they don't. You see, again, Srila Prabhupada, how, you know, he spent every day taking every opportunity to speak Krishna consciousness. And no matter what anyone would say, someone would approach him on any level, and he would spin it around and take the opportunity to tell them about spiritual life. But on some occasions, you see, in some of his conversations, his disciples, wherever he would go, his disciples would try and get, you know, prominent people to come and, you know, speak with him in his room. Sometimes, you know, people just weren't interested, and so, you know, someone would come but they weren't really interested. And you see some of the conversations, Srila Prabhupada makes no attempt at all really to discuss anything about spiritual life at all. Although he spoke to, you know, in one conversation, he spoke to someone for about an hour. And, you know, you see there's a little attempt, and then because there's no real interest, then, you know, they discuss about, oh, you've been to India, oh, yes, yes. And, you know, it was just, you know, so it was a very polite conversation. And then, you know, made sure he had some prasad. Sometimes a devotee is see like that, that, you know, you can, there's no use wasting time. We see with Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami that when that Digvijaya, the pandit was travelling through India and he wanted to defeat everyone. So this is the exact opposite of, you know, what we hear about in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, 34, that one should approach the spiritual master and, you know, submissively inquire from him at this moment of service. So this pandit, all he wants to do is challenge and defeat. So he approached Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami. He wanted to challenge them to a debate so that he would be known as the greatest scholar, because he defeated everyone. Everyone he defeated. And he heard that here, Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, these are the great scholars. If I can defeat them, then I will be the most famous, you know, scholar. So he went there and he challenged. And they say, yes, yes, you're greater than scholar than us, so and you can be this. And I want something written. You know. Oh yes, we shall write something. You're great, you defeated us, now you can be. There was no attempt to, you know, defeat him, no attempt to discuss, because it was useless. You know, whatever they would speak, he had no intention of hearing what to speak of following, not even the intention of hearing. He just wanted to hear himself defeat, so they just didn't even enter into that. So devotees, they certainly won't waste their time with those who are not interested to hear in the proper frame of mind, even though they disrupt the lives of others to give them the opportunity to hear, and they're very, very expert, but in some cases they just understand that, you know, the ground is not fertile to plant the seed of bhakti within this person's heart. Just like if you're planting seeds and you see that the ground is barren, you know, just incapable of producing, you know, something growing, then you don't bother. You go to where the ground is fertile. And also, you know, devotees also have to understand that some people are so intent on not hearing that they will literally become extremely angry, and violent as well. We see that, of course, with the life of Jesus Christ. He was actually, they wanted to crucify him. Muhammad also, you know, as far as I understand the history of Muhammad, he was also, you know, chased. At certain, you know, early stage of his life, they wanted to kill him. and all his family and all his followers. The followers of Jesus, they wanted to kill them, they wanted to feed them to the lions. You know, for decades and decades they wanted to kill them. They didn't want to hear that message. In our line, Shilabhakti Siddhanta Saraswati before, they wanted to kill him. Because Shilabhakti Siddhanta Saraswati before, he had to, in order for people to have the opportunity to hear the Bhagavad Gita, he had to defeat the caste and seminal Brahmanas who had created a monopoly on spiritual life. Actually, Jesus, evidently, he went to Jagannath Puri, and when he spoke a little bit against the caste Brahmanas and what have you, he also was thrown down to Jagannath Puri. History there. But Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, there's those who are coming in the line of Lord Nityananda, and they believe that because they're descendants from Lord Nityananda or Vaishvacharya or what have you, that they have the only right to teach the philosophy of Vaishnavism. And according to their philosophy, you must take birth in their family in order to have that right to teach and to hear. Therefore, had they had their way, we would not be sitting here today, because every one of us would be banned from worshipping Radha Krishna. Every one of us would not be allowed to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Every one of us would not be allowed to chant the Gayatri. We would not be allowed to wear Vaishnava clothes. We would not be allowed to wear neck beads. Everything that we are doing, if they had their way, none of us would be able to do it. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta had to defeat their nonsense philosophy in order to give us the opportunity to hear. And because his preaching was so powerful and making such big movement of Krishna consciousness, that they wanted to kill him, and they paid this particular police officer. He was touring somewhere, not sure where it was, but he was touring. What's that? Vrindavan. There was one stage that the leaders of the various major temples in Vrindavan, they closed their doors, they wouldn't let him in, the shops all closed, people even stoned them as they went past, threw rocks at them, and they paid this police officer that we're going to kill this person is causing so much trouble, we want you to just look the other way. Of course, fortunately, he understood, well, this sort of Bhakti Siddhanta is a sadhu, not certainly going to be taking part in that. But Ramanujacharya also, Ramanujacharya, his own spiritual master, didn't want to hear. Ramanujacharya, he took initiation from Yadava Prakash, who was actually a Mayavadi. And, sort of a pastime here, but one time, I think he may have been massaging his guru, and Yadava Prakash was explaining a verse about the Lord, describing that the Lord's eyes were red like the backside of a monkey. And Ramanujacharya became He began crying, you know, because when he heard such an offensive statement. And he explained that the verse actually means, if you translate the Sanskrit in the right way, it means, you know, red like the lotus flower. So anyway, his spiritual master also, you know, one time he was explaining, you know, different verses in a Mayavadi, you know, in personal way. In personal way means that, you know, God does not have an eternal personal form, but that personal form of God is material. That's the Mayavadi concept. So he was explaining like that. And Ramanujacharya corrected him in front of all his disciples that, you know, no, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has his eternal form, the spiritual world, and he manifests this material and spiritual creations with his spiritual energies while retaining his eternal spiritual form, like this. So anyway, Yadava Prakash, at that stage, he decided that's enough, you know, he has to go, and they decided that he plotted with his disciples that we'll kill him. So they went on this so-called pilgrimage, and they went into the forest, and their plan was to kill him. Ramanujacharya was about 18 at this stage, but Ramanujacharya's I think it was his cousin, a very dear godbrother, Govinda. He actually overheard the conversation of the plot, and he told Ramanujacharya, who, you know, snuck off into the forest, and they all thought, well, he must have, got lost and died. You know, they're like in this deep, deep forest. So they thought, oh, he's dead anyway. So they went back, but actually, Lord Narayan, Lakshmi and Narayan appeared. They disguised themselves as these sort of forest dwellers, and they actually showed Ramanujacharya how to get out of the forest. So anyway, he returned, and he made out that he never really knew about this, you know, murder plot and what have you. And they made out he never really wanted to, you know. No plot to murder, so everything was hush hush. Eventually, Yadava Prakash, his spiritual master, became his disciple. You know, after a lifetime of hearing, it finally sunk in, although in the beginning the disruption was so much that, you know, I will kill you, but somehow by tolerance and, you know, perseverance, he understood, no, here is actually the liberated person. I am the conditioned soul. It appears, in the beginning, you would think, well, Yadava Prakash is the liberated soul, and Ramanujacharya is the conditioned soul, you know, in ignorance. And then it was understood, this is the very purport of Uddhava's question, that it's not always clear who is the liberated soul and who is the conditioned soul. Ultimately, we see that Yadava Prakash understood, I am the conditioned soul. I am full of anger and hatred and envy, lust and greed. And I'm completely in ignorance about the spiritual, the personality of Godhead, whereas you are, you know, have all the Vaishnava qualities and complete knowledge of the personality of Godhead. So you are actually a liberated person. Like this. So, but the point is that devotees have to be careful because they have to be, you know, the devotees will disrupt the minds of people who are very, very materially attached, who don't want to hear about spiritual life, and they do it very, very nicely so that they do want to hear. But they also have to understand that there are always elements in this world who are extremely demoniac, very demoniac, and they will go to any means possible to make sure that no one ever hears the message of Krishna. That is it. So, you know, there has to be some care taken. So this is Buddha's question is, and of course, persons who don't want to hear Krishna consciousness, they actually present others as being the great souls, and you know the Krishna conscious persons as being, you know, the fools. We see that. Sometimes those who, you know, are even in the clergy, the leaders sometimes of even various religions in the world, and sometimes even, you know, within the Vaishnava community, you know, as we said, those who are maybe teaching the teachings of Lord Chaitanya or Lord Nityananda or Radha Krishna, and yet still they're pushing some, you can only be a devotee according to some birthright, which is completely against the principles of Bhagavad Gita. So, you know, in many ways, people are presented as gurus, those who know spiritual life, you know, liberated persons, and when they're not, they're actually fools, rascals, and even worse. And those who are actually sometimes presented as the fools and the rascals, are actually the, you know, or just ordinary people, are actually the devotees that one should approach. And therefore, you know, whatever is asking this nice question. And we see that in the case with, there are different examples. For instance, Ramananda Raya. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was speaking with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, after he had Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, at first he wanted to speak and he wanted Lord Chaitanya to listen. If you listen to me, you know, and I will enlighten you. So here, you know, here's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he is thinking that I will, you know, give you good instruction. And for 7 days he spoke on Vedic knowledge. And then after hearing Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's actual explanation of Vedic knowledge, then he understood, no, I should hear from you. And then he understood, now I understand the glories of the Supreme Lord, now I understand the glories of the Vaishnavas. And therefore he said, previously I met Ramananda Raya, and I thought he was, you know, just an ordinary person. Because he's not in the renounced world of life, he's not a sannyasi, there's not a sign of saffron anywhere. You know, that's a, we see that even with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he was a grihastha, no saffron, therefore, you know, people were becoming disrespectful. So he took sannyas, literally, in order to help people who can't see past, you know. That you know, if there's someone has no saffron, then you know they cannot possibly be very advanced. So you know he was a grihastha. He was considered like sudra. I think they're technically called kayastha or karana. You know the sudras, but they're very intelligent, and therefore they're often engaged in you know government administration and what have you. So he was actually the governor of Madras. But still he was considered a sudra. So, you know, for all the various different... Ramananda Roy also, he, you know, he was a very extremely renounced. Externally, one may completely misunderstand his position because he used to organise plays for Lord Jagannath. And in order to organise those plays, he would, you know, personally organise all the dancers and the actors and actresses. And with his own hands, he used to bathe the ladies and help to dress them and decorate them and, you know, put their makeup and everything like that. He He wasn't agitated. There was no agitation at all, not even a speck. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no one else can do this. Sanatana Goswami was considered to be, extremely renounced. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu considered that they were equal. In fact, Ramananda Roy was actually a little more than equal in that respect. Because, he was just, even in the association, the intimate association with the opposite sex, it's nothing. So, but from an external point of view, it would be seen that, he's associated with women, he's a government person, politician, everyone knows, politicians can't really, that they have some aversion to spiritual life to some degree. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, someone was a politician, he would avoid them. But with Ramananda Roy, he didn't, because it's not the external situation, it's the nature of the soul, the consciousness of the soul. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he said to, we see also in our movement, we have men, we have women. And one should always be very, very careful not to think that because someone is a man, someone is a woman, that in any way qualifies their level of advancement, or superiority as a body. It has nothing to do with the body at all. Although there's a general etiquette, that in society where, women do their, good qualities, they allow us men to, do certain things more often than we should, to perhaps like give classes or, to be at the forefront. It's a social thing, but one should never think that because, that situation is there, that therefore men are more advanced than women as devotees. Be very, very careful. That is another great blunder. We see that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he had 3.5 most confidential associates. With these, he would talk his most intimate subjects, the most confidential discussions on spiritual life. That was Sanatana Goswami, Swarup Damodara, Ramananda Roy, Swarup Damodara, Ramananda Roy, Chiki Mahiti, and his sister Madhavi Devi. So Madhavi Devi, she was out of all of Lord Chaitanya's associates, thousands and thousands, she was considered, in that four, who, heard the most, they discussed freely with Lord Chaitanya the most confidential, elevated spiritual. It had nothing to do with, whether one is a man or a woman, like that. And we see also, with the gopis, of course, that they, one should not consider how they are women and somehow, less spiritually advanced than Uddhava. Uddhava learns, the highest lessons of devotion. We all learn the highest lessons of devotional service from women, gopis, like that. They have nothing to do with man or woman, although there are social etiquettes that we follow. But one should not confuse the social etiquettes with one's spiritual standing. And one should not, in the name of advertising one's spiritual advancement, disrupt social etiquette as well. Like that. So therefore you see that personalities like Sanatana Goswami, Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur was the Namacharya. He is the highest authority in our movement apart from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on the holy name. But Although he had that exalted spiritual platform, he always maintained social etiquette. But because he was took birth in a Muslim family, he did not disturb the Hindu society. He did not try to go to the Jagannath temple. He would never go there because they wouldn't allow him in. But Lord Jagannath, in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, used to go and see him. So, you know, one should not confuse social position with one's spiritual position. And in the name of advertising one's spiritual position, one should be careful not to disrupt, you know, social, you know, the nice running of society. There's no real need. And so, but Ramananda Raya is a very nice example. And Pundarik Vidyanidhi is another example. Giradhar Das Pandit, when he first met Pundarik Vidyanidhi, he considered him a counting shillings man. You know, someone who's into money and materialism and what have you. Because some of the devotees were extremely opulent. Again, one should be careful that just because one sees a devotee who is very, very wealthy and may have a big house and, you know, a good job, big family, nice car, one should be very careful that just looking at that, that automatically excludes them. You know, well, that person could not be, you know, very advanced, and you know, but you know, here's the humble brahmachari in brahmachari ashram or the brahmacharini, they're obviously very advanced, and this person with all these options, they don't know anything. It's another trap. Giddhartha Pandit, he saw Pundarik Vidyanidhi like this. And he thought, oh, he's a pound and shilling man. But later, Mukunda, he, you know, helped him to realize that this Pundarik Vidyanidhi is extremely advanced. He's on the level with Swarup Damodara Goswami, one of the most intimate associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You should take initiation. So eventually, he actually took initiation. Of course, Pundarik Vidyanidhi is none other than Vrishabhanu. In Krishna's pastimes, he is Srimati Radharani's father. And his wife is none other than Kirtida. Ratnapriya Devi or something in Lord Chaitanya's pastime. So, but you know, externally they appeared like. So the point is that one should hear Krishna, one should be eager to hear. One should be eager to hear from the right person, and one should be very, very careful not to look at a person's external situation as to whether that person is the liberated person I should be hearing from or not. And these things, as we go through Srimad Bhagavatam, are all discussed by Lord Krishna to Uddhava, who asked this very, very nice question. I'll leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments.
I was thinking about the title of the case drama in India. It reminded me a little bit of this story that the man came up to the life of the committee when she was telling him to do her, you have to be born from my womb to be qualified. And also,
that's right, we have to be very careful. Srila Prabhupada remarked that his godbrothers, some of them, not all of course, but some of them referred to him in sort of derogatory terms, that, you know, he's just like a lowly, he has to, you know, sort of Bhaktivinoda before, there's a nice pastime as well where when Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur was in Jagannath Puri and he was speaking on Srimad Bhagavatam every day, and many Vaishnavas were coming here, but there was one very famous, highly respected and very elevated, spiritually advanced Babaji who would not hear from Bhaktivinoda Kaur, and he would, you know, speak to others, don't go to hear from this Bhaktivinoda Kaur. That, although he was, you know, very, very elevated Vaishnava, he became very, very ill. So much so that he was literally, you know, practically, you know, fatally ill. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur himself went to him and, you know, helped him to recover from his illness and fed him and looked after him. He asked him, you know, he said, you know, why have I committed some offence that you will not hear from me and you tell others not to? And he said, you know, you speak, you know, as though you were a Vaishnava, but you do not even wear the tulsi beads, you don't wear any of the markings of a Vaishnava. How can you be taken, you know, seriously as a devotee? And Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur said, well, you know, the problem is that I haven't taken initiation yet. I haven't been able to find a qualified guru, and therefore, without accepting a guru, how can I accept the markings of a Vaishnava? So he was considering that, you know, he wasn't qualified to dress like a Vaishnava in his humility because he hadn't actually accepted initiation. So, you know, he's just being very, very humble. So anyway, that Babaji understood that he'd created a big offence, and therefore he apologised, and then he got better. Any other questions or comments? So thanks for that. That was a nice realisation. Jai Bhagavad Gita.